I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For years, students have endured different models of assessment tests, from NCLB to Common Core, and for the college hopeful, the PSAT, SAT, and ACT. So with all this data, you'd think we'd know whether someone was prepared for higher education. But according to several studies, anywhere from 20 to 60% of college freshmen arrive on campus and soon find they're not ready. So now analysts and educators are taking a sharper look at this disconnect between what students learn in K through 12 and what's needed for higher ed. And the blame's being spread around to public schools, students, parents, but also colleges themselves for being too vague about what's expected and for admitting too many students, some of whom might not really be qualified. Meanwhile, the opposite critique is being thrown at the nation's leading institutions that they've become too selective, with students engaging in an admissions arms race to become one of the tiny pool of applicants accepted. Today in The Exchange, our higher education series, A Matter of Degrees, continues with what it means to be college ready. Let's hear from you. How do you define college ready, and why do you think so many students aren't? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have four guests for the hour. Joining us from D.C. is Allie Bidwell. She's education reporter for U.S. News and World Report. And Allie, it's great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in studio, Colleen DeRusso, Director of School Counseling at Bow High School. Colleen's also president of the New Hampshire School Counselor Directors Association. Colleen, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Ann Miller, Assistant Vice President for Academic Affairs at Keene State College. She's worked in higher education for many decades. Ann Miller, good to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Tom Raffio, Chairman of the State Board of Education and President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. And Tom, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning. Glad to be here, Laura.
Well, all of you, and I think I'll turn to you first, Colleen. So what does it mean to be college ready, and are high schools and colleges being clear enough about what that means? Maybe students don't really know what that means.
I feel that coming from Bow High School, that we work really hard to make sure students are college ready for the fact that they need to be open and handle different opportunities and different expectations and different things, not just be academically ready. They need to work with peers. They need to be able to work on teams. They need to be able to do projects. They need to be able to think outside of the box. And I think that that's one area that, at least at Bow High School, that we work really hard to make sure students do all of that so that they can handle anything that might be thrown at them at the college level.
Now, that's interesting. So college ready doesn't just mean getting straight A's or A's and B's. It means, like you said, learning how to work with others.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Do you think, now I'm putting on your hat as president of the New Hampshire School Counselor Directors Association, do you think that other school districts also have that ethic or that value, that it's not just the grades?
I think that most strive for that. I do know that some school districts struggle with it due to funding or due to school boards or some certain ways of thinking that might have happened 20 or 30 years ago, but they're having trouble to break out of that.
Okay, and Ann Miller, there you are at Keene State College on a college campus. What does that mean to you, college ready?
Well, I think for one thing, it doesn't mean just getting into a college. And I think there's so much emphasis on that, people sometimes forget the real focus is on success in college. And we can define that in multiple ways. I would build off Colleen's comment that it's not just about academic success.
Sounds like we lost Allie Bidwell there. We'll try and call her back. I apologize for that interrupting you. Go ahead, Ann.
It's also about the personal growth that happens when students go through their college education. They're clear about what their strengths are, what their limitations are, and what's of interest to them for their career aspirations.
And we'll talk about the application process a little bit later and how some say it's gotten kind of crazy. But, you know, you said that there's been so much emphasis on getting in that there hasn't been enough emphasis on what you do once you get there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, although you got to get in. I mean, that's kind of step one, isn't
it? Step one. Necessary, but not sufficient.
Interesting.
That's where they have to begin.
Do you think guidance counselors are focusing too much on just getting in, and not on what you need once you get there?
I wouldn't say that. I think there are a lot of reasons that people don't necessarily understand what college requires in a realistic way. a lot of them have impressions from their brothers or sisters or from TV shows and movies. If you're a first-generation student, then you have some other challenges around that, and we need to be especially clear with first-generation students and their families. They're a big part of the success that students have.
And by first-generation, you don't mean immigrants. You mean you're the first person in your family to have gone to college.
Right.
Yeah. So, Tom Raphael, this is a big question for you, I'm sure, as chairman of the State Board of Education. So what does this mean to be college-ready?
Well, I think Ann and Colleen both described it pretty well. I think that one of the emphases that we have now at the State Board of Education is to make sure that the minimum standards for high school prepare students for being college ready, and it's career ready as well. And just putting my hat on as CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, I support exactly what Colleen said. It's a lot more than mathematics and technical skills. It's the ability to work with teams. One of the things when we look for candidates for employees, we want to make sure that they get along with people, they can work with teams. So I was really happy to hear that Colleen mentioned that. I think the other thing is that as a state, we're so poised and ripe to handle this issue because the new minimum standards, which we just approved, really are flexible. So it really allows students to get ready for college or a technical career outside of college. And it's one thing I want to mention. While college is certainly an ideal goal for folks, it may not be the goal for every student. I think we want to respect that as well.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about career ready as well tomorrow on the show, Tom. But you talked about the new standards that are coming. Are you talking about the Common Core and that whole shift?
Well, I was actually talking about the new minimum standards, which the board approved. But embedded in the minimum standards are, in fact, the Common Core for English and Language Arts and mathematics. They're part of the minimum standards to some extent, but that's Common Core is actually distinct, and I know it's somewhat controversial, so I'd rather stick really to the new minimum standards that were originally, when I started on the State Board in 2007, they really allow extended learning opportunities, and they're really competency-based, and I'm sure Anne would speak to that we really need to make sure that when the students come in that they not just because of seat time that they got their high school diploma, but they're actually competent in math or science or English.
Yeah, I know that's a big push, that it isn't just you sat there, as you said, seat time, Tom.
Right.
You sat there for X hours, so we're going to assume that you understand algebra. You're saying, that's not good enough anymore.
Exactly. We're moving away from seat time, the 180-day thing, and moving toward, you're past when ready, when you've actually proven that competency. And it doesn't have to be in class. It can be through these what are called ELOs or extended learning opportunities. And New Hampshire is so poised because of our minimum standards, which allow this type of flexibility. And I know Bo can give you several examples of that.
All right. Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, our series on higher education, A Matter of Degrees, continues. We're looking at the question of what does it really mean to be college ready? How college ready are Granite State students? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Allie Bidwell with U.S. News and World Report is back with us. And Allie, what's the national conversation about this idea of college readiness and whether high schools and colleges are clear enough about what that really means?
Yeah, everyone has brought up some really good points, and I think that is what we're seeing nationwide. It's, again, not just being academically ready, but being ready to, like we said, work in teams, really sort of start becoming an adult. And at a very basic level, it comes down to, are the students ready to walk onto campus and take those entry-level math and English courses? And as you mentioned earlier, nationally, 60% of community college students end up in developmental or remedial education courses. And at four-year colleges, it's about 20% of freshmen. So one in five students is going to college not really ready to take those classes. And, of course, that's frustrating to high school students, high school parents, what they need to change to get ready.
And remedial classes, we should say, Allie, right, are, they cost money, but they don't count toward that major. So you're kind of wasting some time there.
Yeah, and it's not a little bit of money either. Nationally, it is in the billions. It's about $7 billion, I believe, each year.
One in five students taking those remedial classes. So why are colleges, this is kind of a big question I'll ask everybody. We'll turn to you first, Allie. You have to kind of look at the colleges, don't you? I mean, why are they accepting kids who need remedial work? Maybe they shouldn't have opened the doors so widely. What do you think, Allie?
You know, I think it's just there needs to be a measure to compare students on. And right now, many times that's the SAT, the ACT. And people have been critical, saying that that test has become disconnected from what students are actually learning in school. But at the same time, you need that baseline. You need some level of comparison to evaluate students. And I've heard from some college admissions counselors that sometimes that means admitting students, looking at their test scores, and then comparing that to how they do in college to see if that score is really a predictor of how well they're going to do in college.
Yeah, and this is a huge question. I'll turn to you next, Colleen. Why is it that we have all these assessment tests from the SAT that Allie mentions, you know, kneecaps start in third grade? We've got all these tests, but we still don't know who's going to make it on campus and who isn't. The numbers that Allie gives us are pretty shocking.
Yeah. I feel that when it comes to testing, there's always going to be that group of students who knows how to test well. And they can test very well and actually just be a B or a C student sometimes. Because they know how to handle a standardized test, they're comfortable in a testing environment, those kind of things. But I think with testing, more and more colleges are actually pulling away from the SAT and ACT in general. And there's a whole, you know, thousands of colleges now that don't even require testing. You can still send them in sometimes if you want, if for, you know, financial or scholarship money, but usually it's not used as a judgment call anymore to get you into college.
Yeah, I've heard that they say they don't. You don't need it, but everybody's trying to get that edge. So a lot of people send it in anyway and do it anyway.
Yeah. And I think that for some of our students, I have seen an uptick in the last 10 or 15 years with just testing anxiety and social anxiety with kids in general. And I think there's just this extra pressure that I didn't see 15 years ago.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll talk more in just a moment, including what some of the best predictors of college readiness are. If it's not the SAT or the grades, what is it? Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is NHPR. It's 919. Make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match their employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Edvest in You, a resource for higher education funding, including private student loans and private student loan consolidation, scholarship programs, and financial literacy education. EdvestinU.com. From Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, presenting Justin McKinney, stand-up comedian and New England native, performing Saturday, May 17th at 8 p.m. Tickets at ccanh.com. And from the Scott Lawson Companies, protecting your company's most valuable asset, your people, through workers' comp, wellness, and health and safety services. HealthierWorkers.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we continue NHPR's series on higher education, A Matter of Degrees, with a look at college readiness. Join us with your comments, questions, concerns, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, just before the break, we were looking at this idea of predictors of college readiness. Is it the SAT? Is it good grades in school? What is it? I'd like to hear from you, Ann Miller, too. What are some solid predictors of whether someone is ready for college or not?
Well, what the admission staff look at is largely they look at the rigor of the courses that the student took in high school. So they look at the transcript. They look at the areas in which the students have been involved in. Involvement is very important to success for college students. It's kind of interesting. People don't necessarily think that that would be critical to success. They might just think that that's a bonus, an extra thing. It's really critical to how these students take in their education, get focused, do time management, do some of the personal growth that we were talking about earlier.
What kind of involvement?
Oh, it can be all manner of things. It could be clubs and organizations. It could be honor societies. It could be charitable contributions when they're involved with volunteer organizations within the city. Something that gets them out into the world, helps them know themselves, helps them know their strengths, their limitations, their interests. Those are really important to the success of our students.
Yeah, and Tom, I want to get you in this too, but you've piqued my interest with that idea that, you know, it isn't just the SATs or the grades, but it is this idea of involvement. There's been a lot of angst lately about just how tough it has gotten to get into some schools. There was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal last year by a young woman, Susie Lee Weiss, who basically was very angry that she didn't get into some of the schools she applied to. And she really was saying, look, this is a game. It's all rigged. And she got a lot of support for this editorial. Someone noted she said, colleges tell you just be yourself. This is great advice as long as yourself has 9 extracurriculars, 6 leadership positions, 3 varsity sports, killer SAT scores, you know, then by all means be yourself. So I just wonder, and I know you're not directly in admissions, Anne, but I just wonder if it's gotten a little out of control, that it's not enough to just, hey, I'm a good student.
I know that there are students that feel that and families who think that's the way in. And again, that's that emphasis on getting into the college, but not the emphasis, the adequate emphasis on being successful in higher education. So I know that's out there. And we, in our admissions process, we try to really focus in the process when students are visiting and their families are visiting campus, talking about what it means to be successful in the college and not just getting in the door. So we are trying to respond to that.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Tom, I can see you want to jump in, and Allie, I want to hear from you too. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, and I want to add just from a humanistic perspective, not with any of my hats as state board chair or CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, but it has to be genuine, and when I meet with students, I always say, yeah, you get involved, but do it from a genuine perspective. There is a college for everybody or university for everybody out there. Now, so that when I meet with students, what I say is be genuine. Do what, you know, yes, you need to be involved with the community, but don't do it so I can tick it off on my college application.
It feels fake,
Because you won't like yourself. And it's not genuine. So if you're going to get into Harvard or you're going to get into High Point University, you're going to get in. And ultimately, once you get there, it's what you put into it. So I went to Harvard. My wife kids me. She said, you could never get in there now. I don't know if that's true or not. But all I say to people is just do. And I realize what that young lady said there. But be genuine and don't worry per se. You know, take the classes that you want to take. Because ultimately, there is going to be a college for you. And it will work out for you, and it may not be your first choice, but once you get to that college, it's what you then put into it. So you can go to Harvard and get nothing out of it, and you can go to an unknown school and become a superstar in life, and it's really ultimately what you put into the college. So that's not a technical advice. That's just kind of humanistic advice that I try to give students when I meet with them.
Well, and yet, you know, she says, and others have said, well, okay, I was just myself, but myself didn't run, you know, a nonprofit for starving children in Africa and ran varsity sports and got a 4. But you know what I mean? I mean, everybody says be yourself, but the person whose self, Tom, looks a little more flashy is the one who is going to get in.
Right, but if you end up torturing yourself by, volunteering for something that you don't have passion for, you're just going to torture yourself and you're going to fail at it. So I would say be passionate about something. I always say the students, be passionate about something, and whatever that is, if it's not running a not-for-profit, if it's just volunteering for a small community organization that no one's ever heard of, that's what you need to do. And ultimately, you will find the college that's the perfect fit for you.
Well, and later, we should all talk about when we say college ready, we should say ready for what kind of college. I mean, clearly, the demands and expectations are different depending on the campuses. Allie Morse, I got to hear from you on this as well, though, this sort of high-stakes admissions war or academic arms race, as some people put it, to get into some colleges. What do you think? What are you hearing, Allie?
I mean, just back briefly on the point about involvement outside of academics and your courses and your test scores and all that. I mean, I was just at a discussion yesterday where some folks from different colleges and Gallup were saying, you know, telling kids that they need to be involved in extracurriculars. That doesn't mean you need to join 10, 12, 15 different clubs, because when they look at that, you have to wonder how involved is the student, how committed is the student to any one of those clubs? How much have they developed their leadership skills? So it might, I mean, in some cases, be just as good to have two or three things that you do that you really get involved in and that you hold different leadership positions and that you can show it's something that you're very passionate about, like Tom said, and that you're interested in.
All right. The phone number again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. As we talk about college readiness, what that really means and how it varies from campus to campus, person to person, let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. And Jake's joining us from Hooksett. Hi, Jake. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Robin. Nice to talk to you guys again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious to find out what the panel thought about the fact that with Common Core, it doesn't exactly help ESL students or special needs students because they're put at a disadvantage. And I was wondering, what can we do to change that? Because if a kid is an ESL student...
English is a second language. Is that what that means, Jake? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
Or a special ed student, mm-hmm. How are we going to help them to succeed in college if we're giving them all this pressure that they're not necessarily going to be able to do to succeed? For example, when I was in Manchester School District as a student teacher this past year, I remember that we had to change the material a little bit just so that my ESL students could probably succeed better.
So, Jake, you're wondering, are we barking up the wrong tree? Are we doing enough for students who might be considered disadvantaged? Okay. Yeah, and Tom, I'll throw that to you, please. Thanks for calling, Jake.
And then I'll throw it to Colleen. But the Common Core, as Colleen knows, is it's not prescriptive in terms of how the teachers teach the material. In fact, it's very conceptual. So it actually allows that flexibility. And maybe Colleen, take it from there.
Yeah, exactly. Very open-ended. And I feel that we don't have a large population at BOAT particularly, but we've had this question many times about special ed. And we do have a lot of students that have 504s or IEPs that do go on to college. Some of them start off at a two-year school versus a four-year school as well, because not every student is ready at 18 as well to go off to college. But with the Common Core, we haven't necessarily seen a huge issue with it. But I think if
it's
someone...
It's still so new.
I think that students in general with ESL probably would have more of a struggle even with some students with an IEP or such because they're learning a new language. They're trying to decipher that language and learn the material as well as being prepared. But that's where things like the TOEFL and other tests that they
Correct.
Can use for the college level can be taken, and then they can take that information and say, okay, this is where they're really at.
So both you and Tom have stressed the importance of flexibility when it comes to college readiness. And yet I wonder, Colleen, if you're going to get into college, shouldn't there be at least a base set of standards that everyone has to meet? I mean, can flexibility get you into trouble?
I think that could very well get you into trouble. But at New Hampshire, the live free or die state, I think it's very hard to have all of the school boards agree on a certain curriculum throughout the state as well. I think that there are some national tests like the AP and the courses that we have that have similar standards throughout the United States. So you can say, okay, this person who took AP US at BOA is the same as this person in Montana. But besides that, I think that you can also look at the level of rigor of courses and how well this person pushed themselves to see how successful they're going to be.
And keep in mind what I said earlier, it's competency-based. And, mm-hmm. and again, Common Core is not prescriptive. So how we get that student to be competent can take many different paths.
Mm-hmm. And you've got to assess that they are competent,
Correct.
Though. And that takes a lot more work than just checking off a box. Yeah, I got
Correct.
An A. Yeah, I got a B+. Allie, I can hear you want to jump in. And then Ann Miller. Go ahead, Allie.
Yeah, I mean, from the issue of Common, like I said, it's a teacher to those schools.
Ali, I think we're losing your
Correct.
Phone again. Yeah, go ahead, please. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Yeah, if you could start over your
okay,
point.
Great.
I think we
Sorry
lost
about
it.
That. Yeah, so I was saying, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, the rest of you guys, Colleen, Tom, but ESL students and special ed students, whether the standards are Common Core or not, they're going to be at a slight disadvantage and they're going to need some adjustment from the teacher, some, you know, shift in how they're learning.
Correct.
Yeah. I would just add that it's absolutely essential that we apply standards consistently, but I would say sensitively and intelligently. We have students at Keene State, as just one example, who never would have been there 10 years ago. If we were using standards that were just defined in one black and white, sharply defined way. And I think that really strong admissions programs, and I think most of them are, exercise judgment. And it is certainly a part of the institution's responsibility to make sure that these students, once they are admitted, that we have the programs in place to help support these students to be successful.
Including remedial courses, which cost time and money.
We don't have remedial courses at Keene State College, no. If our students can't meet the admission standards, they really can't meet those. We have a wonderful community college program that can help those students to become ready so they can build the momentum they'll need to be successful. But we do apply our standards in a way. I don't want to say we lower our standards. Our standards are legitimate, but we are more intelligent now about what these kind of students, the full range of students, need. And we're a public institution. Part of our mission is around access. So we're really looking for as broad of a population as we can possibly support. And some of that responsibility is theirs and some of it's ours.
The phone number again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And up next is Maddie in Dover. Hi, Maddie. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Sure. Hi. So actually, I was just going to add a little bit. You keep talking about the SATs and the standardized preparedness. And I actually was a very good student in high school, but bombed my SATs. I remember specifically my guidance counselor saying, well, you're not going to get into college because of your math score. And so every school I applied to, I, set up an interview saying, boy, I'm terrible.
And at least when it comes to this math score, Maddie, don't put yourself down too much. Go ahead.
Right. Well, but and then I made it through college. I graduated, with three different kinds of honors, and so I was admitted to a lot of the schools that I set up the interview for. But it took that extra step in some ways to really get the point across, because if someone had just been looking at my testing scores, it would have been an instant downer. So.
Wow. Maddie, thank you so much for this story. And Colleen, your thoughts? I love this story. She bombed the SAT math section, so she had to make an extra effort, but it all worked out.
Absolutely. I mean, it happens every year with us, some of our students, too. They can be a 4.0 student, but they don't test well. And that goes back to the testing anxiety or the stress that they place upon themselves. But like I said, there's thousands of schools who don't require SATs. And taking the extra step as counselors, school counselors, or as a parent or as the student themselves to make a phone call to go visit the school and let them know who you are as a person and know, I'm not great at math, but I'm going into the humanities anyway, so I'm probably only going to take a few math classes and, I'll get extra help with that. That's a huge thing.
Well, and this raises the question, and for all of you maybe, college ready for what? I mean, what type of degree? What type of college? If Maddie, our caller, isn't going to be a math teacher or an engineer, maybe she doesn't need a fantastic math score. Go ahead, Tom. I can see you want to jump in there.
Well, Maddie's story is great, and she was really creative, because I would say the greatest correlation to how successful you are in college is the hard work, and that was my story at Harvard. I mean, I didn't score that great either. I didn't have her creativity to say, why I maybe didn't do as well. So ultimately, it's how hard you work at college. But one thing I will say, it is probably the elephant in the room, but the reality is, life is somewhat a series of tests. And so even if you're a humanities major, ultimately, if you want to work at Delta Dental, you're going to have some analytical skills. So we really need to not sort of disregard the fact that we have a great college community system in New Hampshire. It's a great system, but they do spend a lot of time on the math remedial side. And Paul Holloway, the chair, stood before us at the state board and said, we've got to do something with the math standards, which is why the minimum standards are a little bit more rigorous in high school. So while, yes, I'm a big believer, because I'm not a great tester myself, that there's a lot more to life than tests. I mean, there has to be some ability to, deal with that, simply because in a lot of jobs in today's world, you do need those analytical skills.
Well, Maddie, thanks for sharing your story, and good luck. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in from Alexis in Brookline. This gets back to what we talked about earlier about the applications arms race, if I could call it that. Alexis says, I'm a senior at UNH, graduating in December, summa cum laude, member of Phi Beta Kappa Honor Society. I was clearly prepared for higher education. However, Alexis says, in high school, I was not involved in any extracurriculars because both parents work full time. I didn't have a way to get home from school without taking the bus. So she clearly couldn't stay after school to do things. She says, by the time I was 26, I had a full time job, which I've maintained up to the present. Alexis asks, do you think the emphasis on extracurriculars is unfair to underprivileged students who have obligations outside of school that some of these more privileged students don't have? They don't have the same opportunities if they must work, but working develops leadership skills in its own right. Alexis, beautifully put. Thank you so much for the email. And Allie, what do you think? There's a class distinction here. Alexis is clearly bright,
yeah,
successful, but she didn't have time to be in, you know, drama club and run on the track team.
No, and she's certainly right. Doing those, you know, working and all that does develop your leadership skills and other skills that are important in college, you know, problem solving, decision making, those kinds of things. And that's why there are so many pieces to the puzzle in admissions. It's not just your test score and your extracurriculars. It's also your essay, what you say about yourself, who you are, how you became the person that you are today. And I think that that is something a lot of times students can express in that area. And, you know, that's why I've heard from admissions counselors that it never has been and it never will be solely based on your test scores or solely based on your extracurriculars or solely based on your classes. There are all moving pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah, what do you think about this story, Ann Miller? Alexis, thank you so much.
Well, I think Alexis pointed out a really important thing about class issues, and that's the kind of thing, one of the kinds of things that admissions counselors have to take into account when they're looking at an applicant and trying to predict their success in an institution. And I think they do. Again, that goes back to this, our mission around access. So we've got to learn those lessons in order to meet the goals that we have.
Okay. A lot more of your calls and emails after a short break. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. More on college readiness in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren and the debate over opportunity in America. Then Pulitzer Prize-winning author Michael Cunningham on his latest novel. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show is 20 minutes away, here on NHPR, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And from LaValle and Middleton Building Supply, offering pure performance from Pittsburgh paints, combining the latest environmental attributes with premium performance. LaValle's.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we continue our series on higher education with a look at what it means to be career ready. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, we're looking at what we mean by college readiness and some numbers that suggest many college freshmen are not quite ready for what it takes to succeed on campus. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And all of you, here's an email that came in earlier this week, actually, but I want to share it with you today. This is from Leaf. He says, as a longtime college writing instructor at Keene State, I can attest to the vast percentage of students I see coming to college under and often unprepared for college-level writing and critical thinking. It is not simply what students aren't being taught in K-12, though many students do report they've not had to research beyond Google or write more than 5 pages. Their lack of preparedness, Leaf says, reflects the fact that so many students no longer read books or lengthy articles, so they don't know how written language works. They don't engage in discourse anymore. I'm truncating Leaf's comments here. He concludes, and I'll throw this to you, Tom Raffio. He concludes by saying, students today are less equipped for college writing, despite all the federal and state education initiatives. And in a complex world, he says, there are no skills more essential than critical and compassionate thinking and writing. Leaf, very thoughtful email. Sorry I couldn't read the whole thing on the air. What do you think about this, Tom?
As an employer, I totally agree. When we see college grads come in, the thing that's lacking most actually is not math and STEM. And, of course, we're addressing that with the STEM task force and so forth. But is, in fact, the ability to express themselves in the written word as well as expressing themselves in presentation. So I don't disagree. So the one advice, again, when I'm meeting with students is I don't disagree with them. I tell students, read, and practice writing. I think what happens, they get so loose with the text and the email, and what I express to my own employees is that an email going out from the company is, in effect, a representation of the company. So if it has grammatical errors, if it's not expressing yourself well, it's a reflection on the company and yourself. And I can't tell you the number of resumes that we receive with cover letters, with typos and grammatical errors. And I don't disagree. I think we have to push writing and reading. And I think what the new Common Core actually does, in fact, address some of Lee's concern. So even though sometimes the Common Core can get a bad rap on the reading and writing side, it actually does push you to practice writing and practice analytical research and so forth.
So wait, you're saying that these are essential skills, as our emailer says, thinking, writing, communication. But the focus today, all the rage, Tom, is STEM, science, technology, engineering,
and
math.
It is STEM. And as I mentioned, we have the governor's STEM task force, and we have full steam ahead in Manchester, and we have something called the Coalition for Business and Education, which I'm involved with business leaders and educational leaders, and we're focusing on science, technology, engineering, and math, and perhaps arts, if you put the A in STEAM. However, even those folks have to be able to express themselves, so we don't want to put writing on the back burner. I would say it's equally important, and the great thing about the new Common Core, it actually forces you to learn how to write better, and writing, as you all know here, is all about rewriting and having that discipline, and we do a lot of training with our employees on that. So I would say from an employer's perspective, Leaf is right on target. And one way for a student, whether it's a high school graduate or a college graduate, to separate themselves when they're looking for a position is to demonstrate in their cover letter and in their interviewing skills that they have those communication skills that would, in fact, separate you from the competition.
Okay, wow. Well, Leaf, thank you for the email. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. John's calling from New Durham. John, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Yes, I think you know my grandson, Evan, but I thought I'd call in because for 10 years I was a faculty advisor at Dartmouth College. And as a faculty advisor, I was responsible in each of those years for 7 or 8 students who would matriculate at Dartmouth, and responsible for the academic and social adaptation to a rather elite school. And these were kids that all had wonderful backgrounds academically, but when it comes to a predictor of success, and how these people would perform, I would have to say that the greatest impediment had to do with a lack of focus, sometimes self-discipline, and concentration, and the capacity to deal with this plethora of choices, this wide range of temptations that all of a sudden, like a smorgasbord, was laid out for a young person who was not prepared for being the kid in the candy shop when it came to all the realm of possibilities.
Wow. Yeah, go ahead, John.
And so what I would suggest as far as persons who are in guidance counseling, that would be that for a young person going on to an elite school, for example, that person be advised to get up to speed. In other words, a lot of times when they hit the deck at an Ivy school or any one of the colleges, they all of a sudden are sometimes overly ambitious, and it's almost like running a 5K race. I've done those a couple of times where there are young people in the race, and they fire out from the gun because they're all excited. That adrenaline is surging.
That's a good analogy, yeah. And then you take off, you bite off more than you can chew, and then you get burnt out or overwhelmed.
And then you're in big trouble.
Okay. Let's talk about this. John, thank you so much for calling. And just to follow up on his point, all of you, I got an email from Ellie who says, I have a son who is finishing his freshman year in college, and it has been emotionally tough. Could your guest talk about being ready emotionally, socially? So that's kind of along the same lines of what you're talking about, John, although a little different. Allie, again, you're education reporter for U.S. News and World Report. Are educators talking about this angle of college readiness?
I think it's certainly a focus, not just for the teachers, but for the guidance counselors in schools to really, you know, make sure the students are doing well. They're not struggling with behavioral issues and things like that. But the problem is, a lot of the time, states that are facing financial struggles and school districts having to cut their budgets, they lose a lot of positions, and that includes guidance counselors. And right now, the national average for the caseload for guidance counselors is almost twice the recommended caseload. So the average guidance counselor right now sees 471 students.
Wow. How can a guidance counselor help anybody with that load of students?
Yeah, in some states like California, it's much higher. It's over 1,000. I spoke to one guidance counselor at a school in Central California who he was the only guidance counselor in the entire school of 2,200 students.
Wow.
And he said, you know, sometimes it was lucky if he saw them once during the year, each student. Mm-hmm. And so just having that support is also quite important.
Well, and that's kind of a small elephant in the room here, isn't it, Colleen? I mean, with an average caseload, as Allie tells us, of 400 and something to one, it almost seems ridiculous. You can't give kids
Working
the guidance
those,
that they need.
With those numbers, you can't. There's no way you
so
can
So what
spend
do you do
time.
About that?
I mean, luckily, again, at Bo, we have very small caseloads. We have about 200. So we are able to see students. And one of our goals is to have a minimum of 3 to 4 touch points a year with students so that we can get to know them, get to know their classes, get to know who they are as a person, so that we can direct them and help them and guide them to what they should be going on to. And I have the conversation every year with students that says, you know, maybe you're not ready for college. Maybe you do need to take a year off and work or go to community college for a year and just see what you want to do, because you're not putting a lot of effort in here. So why spend $20,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 on an education that you're not really invested in yet as yourself?
How do students, and maybe even more importantly their parents, Colleen, receive that message? You know, maybe you're just not ready.
Mm-hmm.
Because this does get to the idea that we're talking about today, college readiness. Maybe some kids aren't ready this year or next year. Maybe they do need that time off. Maybe they shouldn't go to a 4-year. Maybe they should go to a 2-year. So how do they receive that message from you, though? That's unpleasant.
It can be. But I think for the most part, if you get to know your parents very well and you have the time and energy to do that, they know you and they know that this might already have been taking place over the last few years. So maybe you need to take an outward bound type of course for a year. Maybe you need to do AmeriCorps for a year. Maybe you need to just work to see how hard it is to work 40 hours a week and say, yeah, I really don't want to work at Walmart for the rest of my life. I want to go and do something more. But sometimes they need that.
And the other beautiful thing about New Hampshire was that with the community college system, if you don't think you're quite ready yet, you can go to an NHTI, you can go to a community college for 1 or 2 years, and then go on to UNH or another school, and you still get that four-year mm-hmm. degree. So we have all these what are called articulation agreements, which really make it flexible. So if your young son or daughter isn't quite ready yet, you can go to NHTI and then go on to UNH or whatever once you have your act together. On the first point, I think this is where the community needs to be involved. We have a program called the 10,000 Mentors. It doesn't have to be an official guidance counselor. If there's another community leader, business leader, educational leader that can help mentor children, they can be just as helpful as a regular guidance counselor in terms of, you know, the direction of that student.
All right, let's take another call. This is Corey in Milford. Hi, Corey. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just calling to basically say how good the community college system is in
I've been a student at NCC since spring of 2011 while I was still in high school. And next fall, I'm transferring to Team State to get my bachelor's degree in software engineering. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I went into when I went to Nashville. So it helped me personally a lot.
So this was the idea, it's just what you were talking about, Tom Raffio, sort of going to community college, getting some schooling out of the way, and then going to Keene State. Your institution, Ann Miller, do you see a lot of students figuring it out at the community college level and then coming to Keene? That was not the model when I was in school.
Right, right, absolutely. And, you know, back to the point earlier about are parents and students surprised if a student doesn't make it? I think that they had that suspicion. So some of them wondered. Most of them are not shocked that, oh, this didn't work out. I'm not ready. So I think there is some sense of let's give this a try and see if that's going to work. And then often they're convinced the community college is what this student really needs so that they're going to be prepared.
And then just like this young gentleman, they figure it out. They go on to Keene State. They go on to UNH. And the other thing for parents, the tuition, obviously, at the community college system is a lot less than the 4-year college. So from an economic perspective, more people can go in. As he pointed out, you can also do this running start thing. So your senior year in high school, you can start getting some of your college credits underway without paying college tuition. It's great. And that's one point I want to make. We are so poised in New Hampshire to address this because of the community college system and all these other initiatives that now it's upon us now to act upon it.
Okay. Well, thank you again for that call. Good luck to you, Corey. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that just came in from Nancy. It says, please discuss the underlying theme of having a strong work ethic as a prerequisite to be ready for college and thrive. My experience is the students who do the work and do not cut corners are the ones who can be successful. This means taking the time to read, think, imagine, create, etc. Many students do not have the self-discipline to be successful and need to be open to learn how to do that. Learning takes time. Many students are distracted by very busy media lives. I want to let all of you know also that I did receive an email earlier. I won't read the whole thing because it's long, but another person also felt like the multitude of media and the sort of shortness of everything and the quickness of everything and people being engaged in their cell phones all the time. This person also felt like that was distracting students from that heavy-duty focus that's required in higher education. What do you think, Allie Bidwell? Is this just one generation picking on another, or is there something to that?
I mean, I think that's probably part of it. You know, it's a different time. I mean, when I went to school, when my mom went to school, you know, there weren't cell phones, for example. But I think that technology is also something that teachers can use to their advantage to engage students just simply because they are so interested in media and, you know, digital tools, just finding different ways to enhance what they're already teaching to help students.
Do you want to jump in on that as well, Anne? I know this is a common complaint among certain generations about younger people, that they're so tapped into their smartphones that they're not able to do the deep thinking.
And I'll tell you where I go with that is, and that is who they are. And these are our students. And this is reality for us to figure out how we can work with that. I mean, I think all the points that have been made are legitimate. But would we not take these students to be college students if they can be otherwise successful? So I think it's our responsibility, or it's part of our responsibility, to help them understand what limitations are introduced by those kind of tendencies and give them ways to work beyond that and work outside of that.
In my experience, when we have presentations at the State Board, we start with best practice. Students are technically brilliant, and we just have to find that balance. So technology is here. They are brilliant with it. They know how they have to use it. I think the first point, though, I did research for a book. Every successful student, every successful person in life, it is through hard work and outworking the competition. So so whether you're using technology to help you with that hard work or not, it still comes down to outworking the competition.
Okay. Well, all of you, and maybe you first, Colleen. So how do we close the gap with everybody wanting to go to college, entering college, capable of doing the work? How do we begin to close that?
My feeling kind of goes off of Tom's of the hardworking. I feel that students, first off, need to have some kind of engagement in their own education. And it can't be the parents. It can't be the helicopter parents. It can't be the grandparents who want them to go to a great school. They have to want that themselves, and they have to put that effort in with their academics. They have to make a choice, you know, whether it's working or taking care of their brothers or sisters or doing athletics, to be involved in something, anything that shows that they have a passion for something. And then I think that they just need to continue to learn how to communicate, whether that's with writing, whether that is, you know, learning how to do presentations, working in groups. Those are all the skills that I feel are going to help them be successful at the college level.
And close the gap that we've been talking about today between those who are at college and those who are actually college ready. Tomorrow we'll talk more about career readiness. I want to thank all of you, though, for joining me this hour to talk about college readiness. Allie Bidwell, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Allie Bidwell, education reporter for U.S. News & World Report. Ann Miller, thank you for taking the trip in. We appreciate it. Ann Miller, Assistant Vice President for Academic Affairs at Keene State College. Tom Raffio, thank you for being here.
And thank you.
Tom Raffio, Chairman of the State Board of Education, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. And Colleen DeRosso, thank you also for your time.
Thank you.
Colleen DeRosso, Director of School Counseling at Bow High School, also President of the New Hampshire School Counselor Directors Association. As part of our series on higher education, A Matter of Degrees, we're asking a question every day, and we'd love to hear from you on this question. For today, it's, would a school's policy or record on sexual assault affect your decision to apply or attend? You can respond on Facebook at NH Public Radio or by sending an email to comments at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Ross Boyd. Producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. The intern is James Pouliot. Our executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we continue our series, A Matter of Degrees, with What Does It Mean to Be Career Ready? There's a lot of angst about whether college graduates have the skills for today's workforce, especially in science and math. Some are saying it's time for a rethink of what courses students really need, what they don't, and whether employer expectations are reasonable. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock here on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com. And from Enfield Shaker Museum, celebrating the opening of their Shaker Herb and Community Gardens on May 10th. Information on tours and their Village Gardener program at shakermuseum.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, at 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. America's middle class is under attack, but it's not because some unstoppable force of nature is pulling it under. It's because the game is deliberately rigged. That's what Elizabeth Warren came to believe after years of research into the factors